Okay, ready to go.
Ready to go it is, 9:30 sharp. Today is, let's get it right, Sunday, May 17th, 2020. And for all those listening out of Israel, we're in the midst of a tremendous heat wave here. Yerushalayim today is only 38 degrees centigrade, which is exactly 1 degree less than the all-time record for this time of year. So Baruch Hashem, alive and kicking despite the corona and despite the heat, Ribbono Shel Olam should take us further. It should just be a Shavua Tov, L'Besora Tovat, Aleinu V'al Kol Yisrael. No comments on the new government. We'll leave that to the professionals. Let's comment on the Baruch Hashem Zu Halakha. Today, there's one part of the shir which is extremely important. We'll reach it in about 15 minutes. I just want to begin with a drop of correspondence from Los Angeles. I believe it is Aya Gordon. So some shir, I don't even know when, but recently I mentioned something about women putting on tefillin. So he sent me the link, a copy of the Yonatan Ben Uziel, the Targum. I'm well aware of it. When I dealt with this in real detail, I quoted all this. But be aware that the Targum Yonatan Ben Uziel on the Pasuk in the Varim Chavbet Pasuk Hey, Lo Yiyeg Uyan Detzitzit Utfilim Dehinon Tikune Gava Alita. And that's the Targum Yonatan Ben Uziel, who tells us that it's an Issa D'oraita, that the prohibition against men, women, women's clothing, and women wearing men's, it means tefillin on tzitzit on a woman. All right. But I have to tell you, we have an open Gemara, a Ruvim Dav Tzadi Vav Amud Aleph, that Michal Bat Shaul put on tefillin, velo Michal Bo Chachamim, and the Chachamim did not interfere with her practice. So, yeshon mi lismoch, but we'll leave that for another discussion. I did discuss it in great detail. I discussed the personality of Michal Bat Shaul. It's a very interesting question. Who was she? What was she? What was her psychological makeup? But halacha lemaisa, yesh v'yesh. Okay. I also want to mention, if you haven't seen it, this is a document that's one of a kind. It's from the Israel of Deerfield Beach. I know the rabbi. I know many of the officers, Michael Rackman, my old chavruta, first vice president, others. And it's literally a cherem against Young Israel of Deerfield Beach members who made a minion, an illegal minion. It is with complete disgust and revulsion that we are forced to share with you that in spite of our own Maradi Asra's clear halakhic guidance and those of the OU, Young Israel, Agudat Yisrael, RCA, and other rabbinic organizations, plus recent medical guidance by Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glatt, there were a number of people who blatantly violated our shul's policy and indeed participated in a rogue minion this past Shabbos at Upminster J. That's one of the areas in the little village or the big village of Deerfield Beach. This level of raw chutzpah and dangerous suffix, pikuach nefesh, cannot be tolerated. This type of behavior and the individuals who perpetuated it must be responded to with significant consequences. And then listen to this. Those individuals who participated will be stripped of any current positions on our shul and denied any forms of kibbudim, including aliyot, balei kriya, and shluchei tzibur, and Magide Sheur. And the letter continues, signed by the rabbi, the president, some other important balabatim, a very, very unique document. And I have to say, it's good advice for all of us not to be overly smart. And those of you listening to Rav Asher Weiss will see that he still continues with a very machmir approach to being made kill on pikuach nefesh. Now, I want to come back to last week. We ended up this year. Again, it was quite a bit of basic thinking that comes out of a simple question that Reb Menashe Klein received. But halacha l'maisa, this machlokes over an eruv, can you build it? Is it a reshuta rabban d'oraita? In my humble opinion, it's probably the most grave issue that we still have a machloket in. There are other issues which have reached a certain amount, I would say, of crystallization. Hit gapshut, iskimo leim kol Yisrael, the lashon of the Rambam. You take civil marriage, there isn't a Beit Din today from the Eidah Haredit through RCA, etc., that B'dieved will not say that the children are not Ruzeirim if the mother cannot receive the get and she remarried a second time, a third time, the children would be permitted to remarry. There seems to be a consensus there. There are other issues that have come up where more or less there's a consensus in Dinei Yishut. But the question of the Erev hangs fire. And if we're smart, we can live with the machloket. I love what I quoted to you from the writings of Rabbi Yeruchim. We learn to live with each other. Baruch Hashem, that which unites us is much more important than that which divides us. Now, I want to end off that particular discussion, although we'll come back again. The Erev haunts us, but we'll come back to it again in a different context. In a few weeks, Bezrat Hashem. But I want to show you something amazing. This question of the Erev, which if I were to wake you up in the middle of the night, you know what the Rav used to say, that why the middle of the night? So the Rav svarad that in the middle of the night, your defense mechanisms are not working. So we'll get a glat balabatasha answer. So if I were to wake you up in the middle of the night and I'd say to you, in what chelik of the Shulchan Aruch do we find this issue of Erev B'Rishit HaRabim? You would answer, Aruch Hayim, obviously. So I want to show you, it exists in Choshen Mishpat. Take a look at this source. Look in the Choshen Mishpat, Kup Samach Bet, Sif Katan Aleph. And Morty, this has to do with what we discussed. In Israel today, we have something that really doesn't exist in Chutz Laaretz. At least growing up, I never saw it. Now I understand in Florida, parts of New York, you do have it. But in Israel, Vat HaBayit, Bayit Mishutaf. I don't know if the right word is a cooperative building where we all share in ownership. So the halachas filled with information dealing with these unique questions that come up when I live on one floor, someone's above me, Choshen Mishpat, filled with information. So, Kup Samach Bet, Sif Aleph, B'nei Mavui, Kaifin Zeh Etzeh, La'asot Lechi, V'kuru L'mavoi. Let's say the way they lived then, and we spoke about this when we dealt with the Rubim in great detail, you had a yard in back of all the houses that joined everyone together. In order to carry in that yard and carry from backyard to backyard, you had to put up a tzurat petach. In order to put up a tzurat petach, you had to chip in and put up a wooden post and a wire, and you had to do it properly. It involved an outlay of money. So when you live in a joint property, you are absolutely obligated. Kofin Zed said, you can be forced to chip in. It's like Var HaBayit, for the sake of argument, we just got, everyone in our house got a ticket. It looked like a ticket. I said, what am I getting a ticket for? We have leaves, branches, trees growing, and they interfered with people walking on Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin. So we were told we have 10 days to cut the branches down. So of course we contacted our gardener and he took care of it. Now, imagine someone in the house would say, I don't give a darn, let so what? So a tree knocks your glasses off, what's the big deal? I don't want to chip in, pay for the gardener, he can be forced. This is joint responsibility. You're a partial owner. You share. And we have many interesting subdivision questions. How do you share? My apartment is 5 rooms. Your apartment is 4 rooms. This one is 3 rooms. or no, this is not heat where you share in accordance with how many rooms you have. This is owning property. 16 people own property in Berlin, 18. Everyone has an equal obligation to pay to have the branches trimmed. And this is an interesting question. You find it on a question, taxes. Are we taxed in accordance with our income? Or does everyone have to pay the same thing? And it's, we have both type of taxes. All of you know, Mas Hakhmasa is in accordance with your income. On the other hand, when you go shopping, everyone in Israel, what is it? Mas Erev Musaf, the VAT, that, I think it's, what's it, 17% or Mashahu, because you can correct me if I'm wrong. But that's, imagine I'm going to stand online and tell the cashier, I'm a poor guy, I only make 5,000 shekel a month. Don't charge me 17%, charge me 5%. The guy in back of me, his income alone is 100,000 shekel a month from all his investments. Charge him 25%. It doesn't work that way. So this is the Shulchan, this is the Choshen Mishpat. Beautiful. Now, open up the Orach HaShulchan, and remember the Orach HaShulchan, Rav Epstein, Rav Pimuchel Epstein, the Nevadik Rav, the father of the Torah Tumima, he wrote a commentary in all Dalit Helke Shulchan Orach. So he quotes this halacha that we just cited, quotes exactly what they said, and he says, but it could be that it's not so simple when it comes to Tzirat HaPetach, everyone agrees for a backyard, you can put up a pole and you can put up a wire, it's not a machlekes. What about where it's Reshut HaRabim, Tetzayin Amot, Shita Tarambam, and a wise guy says, I'm machmir, I don't carry. The heck with you guys. You want to be makil, you share in the cost of the Erev, don't obligate me. Doesn't this remind you of the joke about this Jew who's going to convert, and they say, and he's Shomer Shabbos and Kashrut, and they say to him, you haven't converted yet. How can you be Shomer Shabbos if Misha Goyim says Shomer Shabbat Hayat Mita? You have to know you're not a Jew yet. There has to be a difference between Jew and non-Jew. So the guy says, yeah, and Shabbos, I'm Makil. I carry, even though it's more than Tetzayin Amot wide. So this guy says, I'm Machmir. I don't carry. I refuse to chip in. So you should know that I'm quoting the Orach HaShulchan now. Kumo kein b'zeh yecholim lo malo ak she'atam machmir al atzmecha mikol makom letakana ta'ir atam uchrach litein v'eino yecholim ma kimli ka poskim ha'osrin kiven shekva nishpashet ha-heter al-pi hachrak rabbeinu harama ein shum adam yachol lama himli ba-asiyat erev hu mitzvah kudamukach bishas. Very strong words. No one in the world is allowed to prover frumkeit, like the prover shtick. No one in the world is allowed to say, I'm machmir. You want to be machmir? That's a private matter. But the Olam has to have a Mechitza Shabbos, has to have an Erev, and the world is no hey, the 600,000, everything we spoke about, the Pesach of the Ramah, based upon perhaps what Rashi Shita, Chumrah is nice, Fazich Alein, Ich bin Machmir, what do we say in Yiddish? Famir Alein, for myself. Publicly, you have to join. And this may be similar, I'll give you other examples. A mikvah. Every community has a mikvah. No, some of us are older. Our wives don't go to mikvah anymore. So we're going to say, why should I have to pay for a mikvah? My wife doesn't use a mikvah. My daughters have moved away. I have no need of a mikvah. I can live the rest of my life without a mikvah. Oh no, a kehila has to have a mikvah. You're part of the kehila. The same thing with the Talmud Torah. You can say a yeshiva, a day school, the Talmud Torah, chinuch, I have to pay. I have no children. My children are long, my great grandchildren live elsewhere. They're educable, but elsewhere, why should I have to pay? And this is the halacha. A kehila has to have facilities for teaching the children. You're part of the kehila, a mikvah, a Talmud Torah, and an Erev, and chumrah is chumrah, but it doesn't affect your basic obligation. Very fascinating. So there you see that, Dov, that even in Choshen Mishpat, Eliot, this machloket comes up again. Okay. Now let us move further. And we're going to shift gears and touch upon another problem. But at the start of the tshuva, I'm going to show you what Rav Menashe Klein says. And I don't know if he even realizes the depth of what he's saying and what he's opening for us. And here I have to tell you, Samachti, I jumped for joy. What am I talking about? I've often told you something that happened, and I guessed about 1958, and I can confirm I was correct, 1958. The Rav came into shul. We were very frightened of the Rav. It was a different relationship. The Rav of the 70s was not the Rebbe in the classroom in the 50s or the 40s. Well, there was a certain Yirat HaKavod and the Rav's personality, the way you can read Washington, it's all in there. So, and also the movie that the documentary on the Rav, it's in there as well. So we didn't really, it's not like you can walk into class today and you see your Rebbe, you say, hey Rebbe, your glasses are on wrong. You know, it's a different relationship. And we Americans brought that new relationship to Israel. You should know what we accomplished here. You don't start to realize what it was like 51 years ago when I came in Aliyah. Baruch Hashem, today you have Rebbeim play basketball with their students. That didn't exist 51 years ago. We Americans changed chinuch in Israel on that level and on other levels. But we saw the Rav was upset. Something is bothering him. So like after Shia, there were a few fellas that knew the Rav. Outside, they weren't afraid to approach the Rav. There were fellas from Boston. Rebbe, what's bothering you today? And the Rav let his hair down. And he told us the story that I've told you so many times, that he had this girl who married this person against her parents' will, and the from parents, and the guy turned out to be a gangster, and she came home, and he refused to give a get, and he wanted money, and finally they settled on a sum, had it be cash, not a check, and the girl, foolishly, who married this guy against her parents' will, against the Rav's advice, she refused to come to get the get. She didn't want to look asur listakel b'tnei rasha. It's like when the Ragatsheva met Bialik, so all the from ones ask, how did he look at Bialik? It's asur listakel b'tnei rasha. So they said, no, he looked down. He didn't look at him. He didn't look at him like I'm a Chinaman dancing on the moon. But if people raise a question like that, foolishness it is, fine, give him an answer, he looked down, fine. So the girl refused to come. So what did the Rav do? He gave the get al yedei shliach. Now this guy that she had married had once learned in his youth, evidently knew something, a Talmud Torah, whatever, and he went into a shtibl. Remember, I told you the story. And what I did, he tells the story. And he was mevatel the get. Shelo b'fnei hashliach, shelo b'fnei ha'isha, with going against Chazal, the whole sugya in Bitul HaGet and Gittin Daf Lamed Bet, the whole sugya there. So now the guy walked away with, let's say, $5,000, $10,000 in cash, and he now claims the get is no good, and what a dilemma the Rav has. He gave him the money, had the get being delivered by a shliach, and within minutes the guy walked out. This may have been in Dorchester it took place. We have to ask Yitz Rubin where the Rav lived in 1958. And the guy went into a shtibble and levatel the get, at least he seems he did. And now the Rav has this terrible question. And I remember the Rav saying to us, I worked it out, and I'm going to write a tshuva, and I'm going to be matahar. He didn't know what he was doing. It was not Lashon people, etc., etc. The people didn't really understand. But the Rav, you're dealing here with Dinei Nefasha, Dinei Mamzera, you're dealing here with the Surim, the Oraita. The Rav was shaking. All right, so I told this story. It always bothered me. Am I the only one that remembers this? No one else in the world ever mentioned this. I mean, Rabbi Shalom, there are other people alive since 1958. And even if you tell me, Rebbe, you're the only one left alive, which is not so, but all right. But I've been quoting the story 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. No one ever said, wow, Rebbe, I remember it. I mean, you hear a story like that, Mark, you're shaking like a leaf. And I'm the only one who remembers it. So I have to tell you, my dear student, Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein, sent me something. He didn't realize what he was doing for me. I was dancing on the ceiling, upside down, with joy and happiness. Rabbi Meir Lichtenstein, the Rav's grandson, talks about this very incident in a class he was giving in Beit Shemesh. Somehow, here is a transcript of a part of a talk by the Rav to rabbis in February 1958. Couldn't believe my eyes. Now, where did they get this from? I can only tell you my theory. These are tapes that were made of the Rav. These tapes are available to some people today. Someone was listening to a shir from that period and he caught the Rav. And he realized, wow, this is something. And I can't go into more detail. It was the person who caught this finds a contradiction of the, I can deal with it all, but I want to deal with the halachic class now. I have a feeling that what happened that day was as follows. And it all comes back, you relive it. At that period in time, the Rav gave two shiurim on Tuesday and on Wednesday. The first shiur was the college kids. That was, I write about this in Washington, you're looking at one of the gangsters that had the chutzpah to think we knew everything, and Mark, we didn't need any other Rebbe outside of the Rav. I had a kid in short pants, what did I know? But all right, we wanted to learn with the Rav. Baruch Hashem, it didn't harm us and it didn't harm the Rav. So tremendous pressure was put on the Rav. I imagine Dr. Belkin, we kids, I can't believe students have power, but you do have power. And he agreed to give a college shiur. In addition, he had to give the halacha shiur for the people that were getting smicha. And at that time, 1 year he learned Yoredeya, 1 year he learned Evan Ezer or Chaim, whatever, somewhat like the Griscolo schedule. So our shiur was first. I think what happened was in our shiur, we had the chutzpah to ask him, Rebbe, why are you so upset? Later that day, when he was teaching the more advanced class, he said the following. And this is a translation from Yiddish. And it's literally the Rav speaking because the English doesn't make sense. The sentence structure is not correct. It's vimen chabdem. You follow? Because when a person speaks, you roll on sentences, especially the Rav, whose native secular language was German. And if you know the German language, a sentence of 50 words, Charlie, you can testify to this, is not strange to a German reader. I have to thank Chaim Potok when he edited my first book. He taught me to write. He said, break it into smaller sentences. People don't want to read Germanic sentences. Fine. I'm now quoting the Rav translated from Yiddish by someone whom I don't know. And this is quoted from his shir that his grandson, Reb Meir Lichtenstein, who I know from before he was born, when he was a glean in his parents' eyes. Gentlemen, I want to tell you, when you speak, you have first to listen to your own religious conscience. I'll tell you frankly, when I approach a problem, a halachic problem, when I am consulted, I am always prejudiced when a shaila comes to me. I don't mean prejudiced in a negative sense. I always have my religious conscience, and my religious conscience somehow intuitively tells me how the answer to the shaila should be formulated with the negative and the positive. One should approve of a certain phenomena or disapprove. First, I have actually raised this intuition. Later, I'm guided by this intuition in constructing or organizing the response. I'll go further in a minute. You know what the Rebbe is saying here? This touches the very heart of Shalot and Shuvot. If some of you followed through on my suggestion to go through the Kuntas HaShach following your Adei Yoresh Membet, you'll see this issue comes up time and again. When you get a shaila, do you put on sterile clothes? Do you look like a doctor dealing with someone who has coronavirus? You're going into a lab, you let nothing affect you or influence you. You go in a blank mind, tabula rasa. Let me see. Well, no, we're human beings. We got a shaila, and here, a man who can barely see wants to go to shul, but he needs a cane to support him. Difficulty walking, doesn't see that well, definitely wants to walk with the cane. Well, what's your gut reaction? I want to help him. I want to be lenient. You want to be lenient? Absolutely. But then you have to justify your opinion with the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha. And this is exactly what the Rav is saying. Sometimes I get a shaila, and I have a certain intuition. I know what I want to answer. Then I have to go and see whether the sources validate the answer I intuitively feel. I have to tell you, and I've said this 1,000 times over, and it appears in great detail in HaKafet Aron Chelek Gimel, when it comes to Mamzeret and Aguna, Lachatchila, we have to do everything in our power to see if we can be lenient. And this is exactly what the Rav is saying here, although we'll see what the Shailer is. And now, watch. I couldn't believe what I'm reading. I'll give you an example. I now have a question about a get. There was a girl, a religious girl from a very pious home, who married one who was actually a criminal. And finally he left her. He deserted her. He refuses to give a divorce. You know, it's a very tragic problem. The halacha hasn't come up yet with an answer. And finally, some people persisted. Actually, they brought him into the rabbinical court and he gave a divorce. The next day, what we call in halacha, bitul haget, he invalidated the divorce. The problem is now before me. New gentlemen, do you recognize this problem? Do you realize why I danced on the ceiling? Thank God, my memory is good. My memory is strong. I didn't make it up. I didn't do it to entertain my students. This really happened. And now you no longer have to say Rakefet gives living testimony. Rakefet, and a source quoted by the Rav's grandson, Rav Meir Lichtenstein. And now I go back to the Rav. I certainly will allow the woman to remarry. No doubt about it. By the way, it's exactly the Rav's language. It's nishta safek. But my first approach was an intuitive approach, an approach of fairness and justice. Later, in order to live with my own conscience, I can't live with pages alone. I have to live with my own individual conscience. Later, of course, I wouldn't act contrary to halacha, but I'll try my best. Believe me, I'll employ all my ingenuity in order to render a legal decision. But I am always guided. And this is what my father taught me, what my grandfather taught me. I am always guided in rendering decisions by a sense of fairness and by my ethical conscience. You see, there is subjectivity even in formulating halacha. So I have to tell you, this is an amazing document for me in particular. And I'm very makatoivet to my dear Talmud, son of a Talmud, Reb Yehoshua, the son of Harry, zechono lebracha. What a document. Basic to understanding the halachic system. You'll see this in a minute again. And I can tell you, you know, when you criticize, you criticize. Sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes the criticism is unfair. When the documentary came out, when we did The Lonely Man of Faith, and it's, I've told the story many times, I wrote it up in the Kitsua, because it's not earth-shakingly important, but yet you should know it's the only thing in life I ever did all alone, with total opposition, people mocking me, laughing at me, you'll never succeed, you'll never get the money, you don't know what I went through. Till I found the producer and till an admirer of the Rav and yours truly, family connection with my wife's family, up to $1 million, he said, I'm covering it. We never had to raise a penny, and we put out a documentary, which the New York Times called on the highest level possible, etc. All right. So I told the producer, I told the person who was putting it out, because I withdraw, I'm just the godfather, but he's doing the work and he's making the decisions. I said, everyone has to be interviewed. You can't edit. I'm considered more centrist. Rabbi Lichtenstein is certainly centrist, but they're Talmidim of the Rav on the right, Talmidim on the left. Interview everyone, get a total picture of how the Rav was deciphered by his many students. So I have to say, unfortunately, some people on the right refused to be interviewed, and it's a crime, because that documentary will outlive all of us. It's shown on the Rav, it's shown on his 10th yard site and 20th yard site, and maybe hundreds of thousands of people across the world saw it. And it lives on, it'll be used when they write about the Rav in 100 years from now, etc. So when you don't allow yourself to be interviewed because you can't control the total contents, you're sinning against your Rebbe and everything you believe in and believe he believed in. One of the people on the left who was interviewed was Saul Berman. Saul Berman was my classmate, a very fine individual. He is the godfather of Chovavei. I'll come back to him, if not this week, next week in my halacha and what I'm going to deal with halachically. And Saul, in the movie, makes the statement that the Rav taught us before you answer, shyly you have to think, what do I want to answer? And then see whether the sources allow you to give that answer. So I have to tell you, people jumped on Saul, people yelled at me, how did you allow that? I said, look, the producers, I'm not the one, I can't censor. I have to have confidence in the person. I may not agree with all the results, but this is how the producer saw it, and he never knew the Rav, so it was totally subjective. But I have to tell you, with that comment of Saul, there's no right to criticize him. This is the rough talking word by word. There's certainly areas, and that's the Shach, Shita Dechuya, Shita Tyochit, etc. Looking to the Shach, there is a concept. I have a right to say, what would I like my decision to be, and see whether we can justify it. Now, let's go to Reb Menashe Klein, who says exactly the same thing. You probably, you tell this over to a Hasidic guy, you'll say, all right, the Rav was a YU guy, was a Brisker, was a, what do they know about Pesach? You tell it over to someone else, they'll say, oh, Rakhefet said this, quoted the Shach. Well, that's the way Rakhefet understands the Shach. But we, Tzaddikim, Hasidim, and Shem Maisha, all right, here's Reb Menashe Klein. As far as I know, he's in the Gungar of Rav. Hasidic antecedents, tremendous Hasidic yichus, Baruch Hashem, a shtibble in Borough Park, now a shtibble in Ramat as well, but I don't think anyone will accuse Rev. Menashe Klein of being a card-carrying member of the greater Yeshiva University community. And he says exactly the same thing. And I'm quoting now very fascinating tshuva. We'll elaborate and bring it right down to modern times with other poskim, but first, Mishnah Halachot, Chelek Yudchet, Siman Kuf Sadi Chet. I repeat, Chelek Yudchet, the 18th volume of his Shivat, published posthumously, Siman Kuf Sadi Chet. And he gets the Shaila, 1976, from someone named Moshe Yonatan Greenfeld. And the Shaila is very simple. Are you allowed to wear glasses like this on Shabbat in the public thoroughfare? 1976, I don't yet believe, Mark Licht can correct me if he wishes, I don't yet believe there was an Erev in Flatbush in Borough Park in 1976. And the New York in general, the whole Shaila that has haunted us for years of lectures, the Shita Rabin, the Oraita, are you allowed to wear glasses carrying? This is the Shaila. So the first paragraph, it's very fascinating. He writes to this person, please forgive me. I don't know if I describe you with the right titles of honor. I don't know you, so I don't know who you are. But you see, this is part of the Haredi world. I've often said about, if you read some of their newspapers and some of their literature, one third of it you can throw away. Why? Because they repeat time again, Harav, Hagadol, Hagon, Hagadol, Haposek, Hadam, Aran, Rosh, Kol, B'nei. And each time they mention them, they have gradations of the titles. Maran, Rosh, Kol, B'nei, Hagadolah, Posek, Hadar, Harav, Hagon, Harav, Hagon, Hagadol, Harav, Hagon, Hagadol, Hatzadik, Hachosid. And each time they mention their names, they repeat all these titles. We find the Shalom. This poor Reb Menashe Klein is apologizing. He only wrote in quote, Shem Tifato, Harav Moshe Yonatan Greenfield. Let me tell you, look at the Rav stationery. Open up my the first volume, The Rav by Rakefet. Look at his letter to me. Look at the stationery. Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. No titles whatsoever. Titles lead to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're just simple human beings. But this is Haredi thinking. You can't change it. When I wrote of the Suvir, when the Suvir era came out, so Rabbi Yitzvei at a public lecture in Philadelphia criticized me for not calling Rabbi Lazer Silver, Rabbi Kotler. Every time I referred to them, I didn't use the word rabbi, rabbi. And when I referred to the Rav, there I used the word rabbi. And he criticized me in public, a future Talmud of mine. Benny Blau was in the audience. He told me about it years later. If you open up the Suva Era and Rebel, you'll see I use the exact same system in all my writings. The first time I introduced a great Torah personality, I gave all his titles and his background. Afterwards, I used the Rav, the Rosh Yeshiva, for a Barim. I never wrote Kutler or Soloveitchik without it, something indicating Chashiva. But Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't have to go and write time and again, Harav Hagon Rebarim Kutler. The Rosh Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, founder of Lakewood, whichever way, the Rav, the Rabbi of Boston, etc., etc. So he's caught here in this quagmire, worried he may have offended him by only calling him Harav Moshe Yonatan Greenfield. Then in the second paragraph, he says, yes, you're asking me about wearing batei einayim. Here it's very interesting. Batei einayim, I have a grandson. All my grandchildren speak English, but you got to remember they were all born in Jerusalem, and English is their second language. They speak it basically without an accent, but they don't have a total, some have a command of English today, others don't have that total command. It depends if they're in graduate school, their degrees. Some have written a PhD thesis. I showed Charlie and Morty in molecular biology. It's all in English, but they were born here, but they have a dual command. Others speak it, but it's not the same. So one grandson once said, right now I'm sitting here in back of the table and I'm wearing Bermudas. I can't take the air conditioning, so we're 38 degrees outside, maybe it's 35 degrees inside. But so one time he said to us, he called the Bermudas short sleeve pants. That was his description of Bermuda's short sleeve pants. So the old rabbinic description of glasses is batei einayim, houses you build around your eyes. Not a bad description. Evidently, that's the language the correspondent used with the Menashe Klein. So Vic, in parentheses, say he puts eugenglasser. And then he shows he knows modern Hebrew, mishkafayim. He has both of them there in Hebrew in parentheses. And he says, you ask whether you can wear it with shetarabim, and you wrote a whole pilpul, and you will go into three types of glasses. By the way, we don't have the question, so we don't know what does he mean, three types of glasses. It's only guesswork. Reading glasses you see at a distance, sunglasses, three types of glasses. I don't know. And he says, you went in and you give a wonderful pilpul, whether you can wear them Shabbos, whether you can't wear them Shabbos. And he says, I don't want to go into any pilpul. And listen to Reb Menashe Klein's words, and it's exactly an echo of Mori Urebi the Rav. Exactly an echo of Rakafet Aaron Chelik Gimel Aguna and Mamzeret. He says, "Kiven the Kuli Almi Yotzen Bechem B'Shabbes V'Yein Potse Peir." Everyone wears them on Shabbat. No one says a word. No one rebukes. No one reprimands. Svichen Anam Demshukei Nafshen. He says, we have to hold ourselves back. No kilpo. Afilu hayaha heta dachut ma'od. And even if it's a heta bidiyevet, it's a dat yachid. V'lolish finu l'chol olam to'im umavir ulo rim b'chilul Shabbat. And chas v'chalila, we should declare that the whole world is a bunch of rotten, vicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, devout, surreptitious sinners. Chas v'chalila. We have to be melamed zchut and klal Yisrael. Put the pupil aside and let me come to the absolute core of the halacha. And this is Reb Menashe Klein. And in a number of places he says this. But here you see a posek mupart, you see a lamdin, you see a person with self-confidence, and a person who understands the dynamics, the soul, the breath of the halachic process. Beautiful. Okay. Now, let's come to the shaila. And I want to ask you a question. We're not allowed to carry on Shabbos. Isa Dioraita. Abba Rishiyot L'Shabbos B'Shita Rabbim. Isa Dioraita. Chiyuv Skila. Etc. Carrion. Wow. Well, they'd say, Yesh Mimkomo. Tell me. What about, we all carry. When I wake up in the morning, I put on clothes. Right or wrong? I put pants on, I put a shirt on, I put underwear on. All right, which sits it, if it's not a, that, they're already a bit of a shiloh. Those of you that come from Chicago, that come from Brisk. Mark, tell me, in Brisk in Chicago, they wear sits it on Shabbos? Yes or no? Shake your head. No, you're shaking no. All right, I know. Mark Licht, I have a warrant out for your arrest. I'm going back to 66. You scared the daylights out of the grub. When you told the story that you're carrying a scroll to read the Haftorah on Yom HaTzmaut, 1% of the shuls in the world read out of a scroll. Show me where, in Ol Rivka, where I kept the Dobbins 51 years, there they read out of a cloth. Everywhere else, who heard of a cloth? You read, we want to be mocked, you think a whole Tanakh, it's something to a whole Tanakh. If not, you read out of a Chumash. The Rav sees you on a Monday to Thursday, whenever it was, and you're carrying the cloth in to read. Of course, he deducted they're going to read with brachas and everything Kibbutz Adati says and Torah the Avodah and his brisk of mind. He ran away as quickly as he could. And you guys, you took minutes off his life. You scared the heck out of him. Azelkan of Frumkeit, Adkid de Kach, Negate Metaklach. And you're trying to justify, we told him to say halu without a bracha, and then we wanted to give the Rav Levi, the Rav ran away with those gabayim, the 70s, and that whole thinking already at that time, believe me, they ran away. All right, coming back here, but thank you for filling us in with the details. Now I can understand what happened, what was it, 76, with the cloth. Oh my gosh, if I see engagement, that cloth, a silken of frumkeit, it's better than Yom Kippur in 99% of the shuls in the United States. And the Rav's kvodo b'mkomo munach. All right, tzitzit is a shaila, because why are you allowed to wear clothes? Let me ask the basic question. Why are you allowed to wear clothes? What, are we supposed to go naked? New quote the Gemara to me in tradition, the whole shaila with the Kohanim, with the big day kahuna, lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharei. We're mortals, we're human beings. Even though a Kohen cannot be nechenev from the Mabushe Kahuna, but we allow the Kohen to walk after he finished all the avoda, he goes to the side, to the locker rooms in the Beis HaMikdash, and he changes his clothes. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet. Same thing clothes, what, are you supposed to go naked? I'll give you a source, we'll get there. But this is the simple pshat. So anything that's clothes, you're allowed to wear. Underwear, certainly. Tzitzit, this is the shaila. We have a chiyuv and tzitzit, how big the beggar has to be. What we wear, is it zeikladover? This is a kiyum today. With briska humris, they taka took off their tzitzit where there was a shaila carrying on Shabbos. And what Mark says is correct. The Rav did not, well, I'm told in Boston, Yitz Rubin can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm told he didn't wear tzitzit, he was chayshish, but he was not happy when others mimicked him, and he once said, do you mimic me in everything I do? In other words, the main thing is with tzitzit to wear a shear, to have a proper shear, so it could be, it's a lot less of a shayla, and you can wear the tzitzit shabbat, papil b'rishat ram d'oraita, but chas v'chalila, min ha-bris b'mkomo munach. A shirt, pants, a belt, socks, shoes, an overcoat. What about a scarf? You're ready, you can get involved. Mordechai Kaplan took two handkerchiefs, tied them together, tied the key at the end of the handkerchief, wore the handkerchiefs as a scarf, allowed to do it. All right. There already you're on a little bit thinner ground, but it could be that since you could use two scarves as a scarf, two handkerchiefs as a scarf, so you're yotzei. A hat, What about a nylon cover for a hat? No, remember the machlokes? Reb Menashe Klein was mekil. Reb Moshe Feinstein was machlia. Herbie, where you come from, I don't know. Did they wear strimals on Shabbos? By the way, Herbie, aren't you supposed to have that procedure today? I can't hear, but all right, I gather it's later. It's okay. Yeah. Herbie, where you come from, they wear a strimal on Shabbos. Herbie went back to where he was born. Imagine you could turn the clock back, and there he is, a bar mitzvah boy, and they buy him a strimal for the 2,000 shlata. And tremendous rain, snow. No, are you allowed to put a nylon cover on it? And this is the Shaila. Is it normal to wear two hats? Or are you just putting on a cover? You're just putting on a cover? You're not allowed. Galoshes, or rubbers as we call them, it's easier lahatir, because there you are wearing two pairs of shoes, and one is to protect you from the rain, but it's a shoe nevertheless. But a nylon cover is simply a cover. So clothes you're allowed to wear. Fine. Now let's go to the other extreme. You have a big spoon. You're going to a kiddush. And called the Eilim Gavad. The stronger you are, the quicker you are, the more food you can get. I have a policy at my age for decades already. I never go to kiddush because it's embarrassing for me to stand and fight for food. No. Also, how can you go to kiddush if an hour later you're eating a Shabbos meal, kedak v'kedin? But kids go to kiddush, they find, you have a big, big spoon. With that spoon, you can grab with one shot enough challen that the other people have to go five times and fight with their little spoon. So you have your big spoon. You're going to kiddush on Shabbos. You put it in your pocket. Elliot, it's in your pocket. Are you allowed to go with it in your pocket? Absolutely not, right? You're carrying. What about, Murray, if you pin the spoon to your shirt? You have the spoon. You had it made with a pin. You pin the big spoon to your shirt. Interesting question. It's a kli, it's a spoon. You're not allowed to do this. The only thing is, you probably wouldn't be as chayav mita, it's hotza shelo kederech. Generally, a spoon you carry out in your pocket, pinned to your shirt, to your jacket, to your coat, to your scarf, could be that already. It's not a chayav d'oraita, it's hotza shelo kederech. But halacha l'maisa, not allowed. So look, you have two extremes. Clothes, you're only a human being. Torah can't require you to parade around in your birthday suit on Shabbos as if you're at a nudist colony. A human being wears clothes. No shayla. Anything that's clothes, you're allowed to wear. Yeah, we can argue over a covering on a shtreimel, fine, machlokes hapaiskim, but basic clothes, tzitzit, you have a briska chumra, b'bakasha. But basic clothes, allowed to wear. Go to the other extreme, a fork, a spoon, a knife, a plate, it's a kli. Not allowed to carry it. And even if you pin it on to your body, it's chutzah, not allowed to carry. All right, it's shelo kederech. It'll be less of a chiyuv. But asa, absolutely asa. You, my friends, then you come to the middle. A kishut, a decoration. Jewelry, call it what you wish. Who here comes from the Soviet Union? We saw the Soviet Union in all its glory. She didn't make money. Raketvit will get a prize for teaching Torah. Imagine they'll recognize someone for teaching Torah. Halavai. Gets a prize here in Israel? A check, I don't know, 18,000 shekel. Very nice. In Russia, Rakefik will get a prize for teaching at the University of Moscow and inculcating the love of communism in so many students. There was no money. You get a beautiful gold medal. Did you ever see recently, May 8th, when they celebrated the Russian conquest of the Nazis, Yamach Shmom, and they got some old-time Russian soldiers to come out to the celebration? Did you see the two of them in the newspapers? They had more medals on their chest than we own shekel, 100 shekel bills. It was, one of them had must have had 30 different medals. I don't know how he stood up, how he sat down. And I remember in Russia, when the commentator would speak on the news at night, the military commentator, you can't believe the medals. When that guy tried to stand up, he fell over the weight of what was on his chest. No, he should. It's a decoration. I'm going into shul. Let them know who I am, what I did, what I accomplished in my life. Medals, schmedals. Are you allowed? Very interesting question. What's a kishut? How do you define it? Quote to me, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had a fabulous wife. Shaliv shala shalahu. Everything he accomplished was due to his wife. You all know the Gemara, the story, Gemara in Yevamot, elsewhere. Classic example of an Eshet Chayil. And what gift did he buy her? Yerushalayim Shel Zahav? Whatever it was. Again, we don't know exactly, as you will see. But let's assume it was a beautiful little sculpture of golden Jerusalem that she could pin on to her dress, pin on to her blouse. Is she allowed to wear that on Shabbat? Tachshit, kishut. A woman, you're getting involved here in a gray area. Tell me, do men qualify? Do we go around with tachshitim? Let's ask another question. You fell in love, you got engaged, you gave the girl a diamond ring. Shabbat is a kiddush, and she's coming to shul with her diamond ring and showing it off. Allowed? Not allowed. And if she's allowed, what about the man after a wedding? I already have grandsons. Married to frum girls 100%, and they're wearing wedding rings. Seems that's the minhag or the nohag here. I asked them, wedding rings, when did you get it? No, not chas v'chalila, you were masadik, not under the chuppah. After the wedding. But my wife feels I'm a very handsome guy, a very attractive guy. She wants everyone at the university, everyone at work to know that I am married. Fine. You allowed to wear the wedding ring to your wedding band, the man allowed to wear it on Shabbos? Wow, what you get involved with here with questions. The two extremes are very simple. Malbush is mutter. Kli is usher in any form or shape, although I agree it could be shalom kadaka. So it's less of an issa. The middle, takshitim, kishut, how do you define it? And more than that, even if you can define what is and what isn't there a difference between man, between woman? Isn't there a big difference in how we relate to jewelry? Doesn't the halacha declare that before every chag, if you can afford it, you have to get your wife new jewelry? If you can't afford it, at least new clothes. Isn't that Minhag Yisrael, which I have been guilty of not always observing? But with a woman, absolutely he should. A man, how do you feel when you see a man on Rehov? I saw this on the center of town, Rehov Ben Yehuda, and I see a guy handing out, it was during an election campaign, big earrings in his ears. Boy, I was ready to throw up. And then I look, he's handing out information to vote for the Likud. I said, Ribbono Shel Olam, look how powerful the Likud is, that even guys with earrings that you would think are anti-establishment, liberals, anti-religion, guy is handing out information for the Likud. But how do you feel about it? And then you see a girl, a ring in her nose. How do you feel about that? Like a behemoth. And then you see men with rings in their nose. Guts are up hidden what goes on in this world. Where do we draw the line? Halacha. What's involved? Public thoroughfare. Thank God. We have a rhythm all over. But these are real shaylot. These should be all right. The public thoroughfare is shit harabim. And if you take the chumrah that 600,000 is not required, just the Rambam, Tetzayin Amot, look how the Shaila multiplies. What is a kishut? What can you wear? What can't you wear? Man, woman, etc. What a she'ela. Right, before I quote Rav Menashe Klein, let me give you one Gemara, the most basic Gemara on this topic. You can go through all the Rishonim and Achronim, but everything goes back to this Gemara. Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Tet Amid Bet. Bamech HaIsha Yotzei, this is the famous Perek Shishi, and it deals, and this Daf, it deals with the Ir Shel Zahav, Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, that Rabbi Akiva made for his wife. Tanu Rabbanon, Lo Teitse Isha Be'ir Shel Zahav, V'yin Yatzta Chayevet Chatat, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Chachomim Omrim, Lo Teitse, V'yin Yatzta Petura. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Yotzei Isha Be'il Shel Zahav Lachar Techila. Three different opinions. Whatever this Ir Shel Zahav is. But let's imagine it's a beautiful pin in gold with the walls of Jerusalem surrounding, for the sake of argument, the Kotel. And three different opinions. Rabbi Meir says, Chayav Chatat. Chachamim say, Lachatchila, you shouldn't go out, but if you did go out, b'di'eved, you're patur, you're not Chayav Chatat, it's Chotzah Shelo Kederech. Rabbi Leir Shomer, Lachatchila, she's allowed to go out wearing this pin. So the Gemara asks, but my comet Liki, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Meir Sava Masoi, it's carrying. It's absolutely tiltul b'shut harabim. Fine. Rabbanim Sabre, the rabbis hold, tachshitu. It's not a kli, it's not carrying. It's a decoration. You're allowed to wear it, b'rishit harabim. But the rabbis asked it. Why? Dil meshalfa umachuyale va'ata la'atuye. That maybe the woman's going to take it off and she's going to show it off. She's going to show her friends. Take a look. my husband loves me so much. Look what he bought me. Look what he got for me. Could be women are show-offs. I don't know. Isn't this what the whole industry of clothing is based upon? You go and look for clothes. Big shopping mall. Three stores that catered to men. 30 stores that catered to women. Shoes. One store for men. 100 stores for women. Imagine their whole mentality is different. This is the Gemara in Shabbos. Nashim am bifnein atzmam kein. Women are a nation unto themselves. They can't be judged the way you judge men. Their lifestyle. Ask that famous speaker, Harabanit Mizrahi, if I have the right name, I think she has a doctorate too. She talks about shopping, what it means for women. Could never talk that way about men. We are so different, 100% from each other. So, women, they're wearing this beautiful decoration, this beautiful ornament, this beautiful jewelry. They're going to show off. They're going to brag. They're going to take it off. The Rabbanim said, better not to wear it. It's a gezeira. It is a fence around the fence, a fence around the Torah. We don't want you to mistakenly take it off and carry it. And Rabbi Leza says, no need to make a takana like this. You're allowed to wear it. It's not a problem. Why? Rabbi Leza Sava. Man daka lemeipik be'ishal zahav, isha chashuva. The isha chashuva lo mishafla umchaya. A wealthy woman doesn't have to budge. And I can tell you, doesn't have to show off. She's not going to take it off. Mark Wiener and Mark Licht, pardon me for not mentioning all your titles, I apologize. I want you to know this is so absolutely true. I go to a wedding, B'didi HaViyuvta, and my wife has to have shoes that match the dress, and this one shoes that match the dress, and the wealthiest woman there, beautiful dress, jewelry. Eina niyut b'mokam ashirut. Sneakers. She's an older lady. Easier to walk. Easier to dance. Sie pfeift auf den Welt. She's laughing at the world. Sneakers. This is a wealthy lady. People who don't have that wealth. All right, look at the ring my husband bought me. Look at the sapphire jewelry. Oh, what my husband did for me, how much he loves me, etc. A woman of wealth, she, even if she's wearing a piece of gold that's worth a few $100,000 in some fancy decoration, she doesn't mention it, doesn't talk about it. I have to tell you, this Gemara is so insightful. And I quote to you now from Schottenstein. I love the way they explain it. Rabbi Meir deems the city of gold a burden rather than an ornament. He holds that wearing it is akin to carrying it and biblically forbidden. And according to the sages, there is no difference between a city of gold ornament or any of the other types of ornaments. But it's rabbinically prohibited because a woman may remove it and show it to a friend and come to carry it dalet amot in the public domain. And then the third opinion, the city of gold, very expensive and only wealthy and important women wore it. It is beneath the dignity of a distinguished woman to show her jewelry to others in the street. Therefore, there is no reason to fear that she will come to carry the ornament. So this is the Gemara. Three different opinions. One, that there are ornaments and they're ornaments. Some ornaments, and this is that whole Perek in Shabbos, some ornaments women are allowed to wear, to go out with them, not a shayla, permitted for women. Some ornaments, like a city of gold, are not really ornaments. It's a pure display of wealth. Look how wealthy I am. Look how much gold I'm wearing on my bosom. Oh boy. She's showing off. This is part of being a woman. I don't want to offend anyone. It's part of the feminine mystique. You want to prove that I'm right? Go to a shopping mall. Look at the example I just gave you. I'll give you a better example. Open up the Frum magazines, Ami, Mishpacha. Take a look at the advertisements for clothes. Open up Nashim in Israel. Open up La'isha, Ribbono Shel Olam. Look at those advertisements. Look at the clothes industry. And we have fashion. And here in Israel, you have fashion strictly for Frum women as well. A woman remains a woman. Clothes is tsanua, but the men have to earn a living to be able to afford what the women want. So you have to understand what is clothes, what is a kishut, what is permitted, what isn't permitted. And then with the kishut, there is also the whole question of the rabbinic problem. Maybe she'll take it off and show it to others. That is real. New, my dear friends, men, does kishut apply? Do we walk around showing off? Very interesting question. Who grew up in the United States? Who grew up without an Erev? Who grew up with a tie clip made out of 14 karat gold in the shape of the key to your house? Do you remember or not? Who grew up with a belt buckle where the buckle was the key that opened your door? Do you understand the different shades of the question you're getting involved with? A tie clip, is it a kishut or is it carrying? Is it a kli or is it jewelry? Can you take a tie clip and make it out of gold, gold plated or 14 karat? I don't remember. I had one. Oh my, that's this question. How do you define the kishut by a man? Where is the limit? Go a step further. I want my spoon to grab the challenge at the kiddush. I want my fork to dig in to a good piece of kugel at the kiddush. I'll carry it shalom kadaka. I'll slam it into my, right between my pants and my shirt. Allowed? Not allowed. Absolutely not. All right, shalom kaderech, less of a chatat, less of a sin, but not allowed. Where do you draw the line? All right? Watch what now comes under this category. We'll come to sources. Let me introduce it. Then we can run through the most fascinating sources imaginable. Right till I'll show you the latest written just a few months ago, let's say. You know how the Shiloh goes? Tell me, you have glasses, but you don't wear them all the time. No, chains around your neck. Am I right? What's the word? I'm using the word chains. Maybe there's a better word. You can correct me later. It's attached to your neck. Allowed to go out with glasses like that. Tell me, What about if the chains were made out of gold, made out of silver, were made a real kishut, like a ring, like a bracelet? Allowed to wear it? Not allowed to wear it. Let's go further. Who had a grandfather or a great-grandfather who could still boast about the beautiful golden clock that he got at his bar mitzvah, that he wore on a chain around his neck, hanging down? Weren't those the way clocks were 100 years ago, 80 years ago, 70 years ago, 60 years ago? I remember it like yesterday. Allowed to wear it in Shabbat? Is it a kishut? Is this hotza'ah? Are you allowed? It's kiderech, shalo kiderech. What are we talking about here? Now let's go a step further. A watch. This little wristwatch. Allowed to wear on Shabbat? You grew up in the Bronx, you grew up in Washington Heights. Charlie and Broyus Gehillah, did they wear wristwatches on Shabbat? Shake your head, yes, sir, yes. You're shaking your head, yes. I see they didn't follow Reb Moshe's psak. Is this a kishut? What is this? This is a cheap watch bought in the, where did I buy this? In one of the cheap stores, Walmart. One for $14, for $18, I don't know. I got the better one, because I always would get one with the strap. Within 2 years, the watch would last, but the strap didn't. This, I think, will last longer. I hope so. Wonderful watch. Is it a kli? Is it a kli or is it a kishut? A takshit? I think it's a kli. No, allowed to wear it? Not allowed to wear it. Very fascinating question. And then what you have in the Ramah, what you have in the Shulchan Aruch, how do you transport your glasses? I have reading glasses. I have a golden case, a silver case for the glasses. Am I allowed to wear that case around my neck with the straps? Maybe that's a better word than a chain. With the straps? And my glasses inside the case? Is it a kishut? It's golden, it's silver. There's a halacha that discusses it. What do we do? How do we do? What's the law? What's the rule? Glasses. What about sunglasses? Tell me, sunglasses? Don't you take them off? You walk into the shade? I don't need these sunglasses. You take them off. You're carrying Dalet Amot Bishut HaRabin. Let me go a step further. Something you grew up with if you were sensitive to this halacha. Yitzchak, you were one of my shluchim to the Soviet Empire. You and Judy Zichrona Lebracha. Tell me, you grew up in Boston. It's cold in Boston during the winter. Did you wear gloves on Shabbat? How many of you have studied Mishnah Berurah? How many of you have looked into the Achronim? A whole machloket. Are you allowed to wear gloves or not allowed to wear gloves? Gloves, definitely a bigud. But on the other hand, there's nothing more common than to take off gloves. You meet a friend on Shabbos. First thing you do is take off your gloves to shake hands. You're not allowed to carry. You'll forget to put them back on. You walk Dalet Amot. You suddenly met your friend Shabbos morning after shul. Yankel, how did the Dodgers do last night? Well, I shouldn't say last night. I'm talking about the Dodgers. How did the Dodgers do yesterday afternoon? It was too late for me to hear the score. Shabbat began. All right, you start talking. The Dodgers, the Yankees, the Giants. You're a kid again. Totally forget. You're walking Dalet Amot, carrying your gloves. Tremendous machloket achronim if a man is allowed to wear gloves on Shabbat. Yitzchak, you went to Russia. You're worried about the cold in Brookline, in Roxbury, in Dorchester. Think about what we hit in Russia. I remember getting off the plane in England. This was 85. And we're now ready to get onto the plane that's going to take us to Moscow. And they're announcing very calmly, 25 degrees below 0 centigrade in Leningrad. That's not Moscow. Moscow was 30 degrees below zero. Leningrad, oh my gosh, allowed to wear gloves. And who speaks about an Arab there? Manda Hashme, we're talking in 1985, 1981. Rebbeinu Shalaylam. Today there may be a Reuven all over. That's a different story. But man dechashemay and erev gloves reshuta rabbi the oraita. You're walking through Red Square, Al Yad Lenin's tombstone. Enough room for what is it? 3 million people to come together. Debra reshuta rabbi the oraita. A few times a year, millions and millions came out to wave to the communist flag and salute the greatness of communist achievement, the Soviet Union. No, allowed to wear gloves, not allowed to wear gloves. Wow. And let me come back. I'll end off with this example. We'll go in, we'll deal with every Shiloh and it'll all fall into place. But this is an introduction to think about. Let's come back to Golda's Green, to the monk shul. Put up an Erev in London. And by the way, the machlekes still goes on. My Talmud Aya Liebman sent me guidance from the rabbinate about what to do carrying in London the Shittah Rabbin. Not so clear that they're makabu the Erev. But the monk shul was called Rabbi. I mean, he wasn't there. He died. There was still named after him. But the rabbi then, and there's a sign up, I saw with my own eyes, if you're Samach on the Arab, you cannot have an Aliyah, you cannot be a member of the Shul. All right. So they say a Jew got an Aliyah, they swear to me it's a true story, a Jew got an Aliyah, King Shabbos, and he came with the king, and he got an Aliyah. So they were hysterical. They relaying the whole Torah, the whole Pasha afterwards, that this Jew came to shul on Shabbos with the cane. So I want to ask you, can you walk with a cane on Shabbos or can't you? How do you view a cane? Is a cane a tachshit or is a cane part of your clothes? Now, what do you mean part of your clothes? If I don't have shoes, I can't walk with shittarabim. I have shoes I wear in the house that are not so supportive. I have shoes that I wear downstairs. Whenever I go out of the house, I change my shoes. Without those shoes, I can't walk downstairs. What about the inserts that I had done here in Yerushalayim? Fabulous results. I can jump. I finished Yerushalayim a year ago a little over a year. I couldn't even walk. My feet were acting up again. Well, without the shoes, I can't go out. Absolutely allowed. A cane, if the only way I can walk is with a cane, it's part of my clothes. It's like a shoe. It's no different. Nu, do you recognize this or not? There are many achronim who paskin la halacha. If the only way you can go out with the cane, without that you couldn't walk, you couldn't get the shoe, you're allowed to use a cane on Shabbat. And that's what's amazing about that story in London. The minute I heard the story, I asked right away, was the guy totally dependent on the cane? Or was it just to Yehuda Va'od, to look chashuv, like a Rebbe? A Rebbe goes with a cane, the more chashuv that it's either a silver top or a golden top. And that's halacha l'maisa. When I wanted to become, or was dreaming, and people wanted to crown me, maple with a Rebbe, was not only a beard and payas and a bekesher and a shleimel that I would need. Oh, but I needed a cane. I begin with a silver one. And when I hit 2,000 families of chassidim, it would turn into a golden top. No, but if he needs the cane to walk with, it could very well be. It's no different than the insert in your shoe, which enables you to walk like a normal human being. My dear students, to reiterate, I hope I've been able to make a very clear shia and raise many, many problems. We'll come back, I'll show you sources, I'll come back to Saul Berman again in a different light. And I want to reiterate the first part of the shia was very important. You have no idea how I rejoice that I'm not off the wall. Morty, you've been studying with me many years. You studied me decades already. You probably heard me refer to the story with the Rav 4 or 5 times over the last 10, 20 years. Jack, right or wrong? And I always bothered me. I'm the only moron that still remembers this. Maybe I made it up. I mean, something like that. You hear the Rav, you got to shake, you got to shiver. And Baruch Hashem. Now, I would like to know where Meir Lichtenstein, Rabbi Lichtenstein, got it from, what the origins are, who else. My theory is interesting. Am I right? I don't know. With the theory, you can never, Professor Jehoshua Finkel taught me, never say you're 100% right with the theory. At the most, 90%. With this theory, I'll say maybe I'm 50% right. I'm guessing. But it would seem to, because the Rav did not say this to us. He just told us what happened. But it could be an hour and a half later, 2 hours later, when in his subconscious already it was, he was reliving it. It could be already to the fellow studying halacha, he already dealt with it on a halachic basis. How would you paskin? All right, then we opened up the floodgate on a different question. Can you wear glasses in a public thoroughfare? Very fascinating question. This is the basic Gemara I showed you. Then we'll see Reb Menashe Klein, see what he paskins, and very fascinating at the end, as you'll see. And then I want to show you the various sources that he alludes to, and I'll add to it a little bit, and you'll see it discussed in great length, all the way from Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata to the Aruch HaShulchan, to the Chayei Adam, to the Shulchan Aruch, to the Vilna Gaon, and all the way down to Rav Melamed with the most contemporary sefer that is written. My dear students, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for honoring me with your presence on the screen. Mark, I apologize, I called off the search. We forgive you, but please understand what the Rav thought when he saw you or your friends carrying a cloth to read the Haftorah. You have to understand the Rav Nachum, Zalo Pashut. And I too, if I would have seen carrying a cloth with Azelka Nechumra, I would have said, oh no, this is going to be a B'nai Akiva, Kibbutz Hadati, Torah V'Avod Dominion, and my Briska upbringing is going to have a lot of problems with it. All right. I also want to thank all those listening across the wide expanse of Torah civilization. I thank you for your kind words. It's very moving to me. I don't take it for granted. Please understand me. I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam that I mastered today, tuning in, turning on. My granddaughter is getting back to regular life. My daughter is getting back to regular life. And Ein al mi l'smoch, ela avinu sheva shemayim, that even a non-technical person who grew up long before, if anyone would have told me back in 59 when I started teaching, Ani, the day will come that you will look at your students on the screen and you will lecture to the screen. I would have said, my friend, you are crazy. And believe it or not, science fiction, all my apologies, the day is here. Tomorrow morning, I wouldn't miss the shiur for all the rice in China and all the editorials and cuss words that will be issued against the new government being formed. I wouldn't miss it for anything. Jack, tomorrow we hit home. We begin with the Rav, his tremendous chumrah, machlokes between Chicago and New York. And then we're going to spend a few good shiurim, the Ketuba, the conservative Ketuba, the RCA, the RA, Rabbinical Assembly, leading to the joint based in, leading to the RCA based in will deal with the RCA Ketubah, while life, in my humble opinion, the more knowledge we have, the happier we are. And I'm happy that I'm able to present those shiurim, the kavod u'tiferet. Until we meet again tomorrow morning, Be'ezrat Hashem, I want to say the Sora Tova, the language of Kol Yisrael, Das Betanya. Mori,
okay. I'm stopping the recording. Just give me.